We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 4 years and one day into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Marty Foster. Marty, how are you today?
I'm very good, thanks. Full of leftover curry, which is quite a substantial lunch. The sun is shining. We've just had one of those little spring showers that just pattered a little bit of rain everywhere, but the sun's back out again now. So very nice. Very good. Thank you. How about you?
I'm just fine, thank you. I see that you've got your... you're going to be out with the Houthis later today with that lovely garden
I have hanging around. I wear this shamag to confuse people and to keep my neck warm because it's a thing, tech neck. If you spend all of your day playing computer games, working on screens, what happens is you get a crick in the neck and, you know, it's all about posture and everything. So I keep my neck warm with this shamag all day because... it's comfortable. It's a very good piece of clothing, and it also confuses the hell out of people. It makes people assume that I'm some kind of Islamist supporter, you know, like Queers for Palestine or something like that.
Could go well in certain circumstances. I will talk about what that is here in just a second. So, but before I do that, for those of you who are interested in supporting the work that we do, if you like the content you're hearing, the link will be in the program description down below where you can come on board as one of our paid subscribers and or contribute a small donation to us. Thank you very much. Right. A sympathizer, a supporter, possibly? Well, I guess that would fall under labor's jurisdiction, wouldn't it?
How do you mean? Someone who sympathizes with the...
I was thinking more like Jeremy Corbyn. Yeah. Somebody like Jeremy Corbyn. You know.
Jeremy Corbyn just wants to cuddle any terrorist.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's a weak little man.
he is.
I think he gets kind of man crushes on people like... I've forgotten the name, Martin McGuinness.
Jerry Adams. We're going to talk about Jerry Adams here in just a minute. I have something on that. But because, you know, he's a Sinn Féin representative, he's sitting in the part, you know, he's an MP now. Biden actually took the selfie with him, if you remember. I had it on the thing.
Yeah, well, they all hate the UK. They hate Britain. So does Biden. So did Obama. So it's no surprise that they'll cuddle up to any of our enemies. And, you know, it's like, it seems to me most people, certainly on the East Coast of the United States, don't want to be American. They want to be Irish. They, you know, the people in Boston and so on. Yeah, we're Irish. So people like Biden, they'll try and answer anything.
Yes, of course they will. All right. Well, like I said, we'll talk about Mr. Adams here in just a moment because I have something you might find interesting. But before I get to that, you had an unfortunate incident with a, you say it was an election person, lobbyist.
Yeah. We're in an election year and local council elections. And we've now received a flyer through the door from all three major parties. Liberals have dropped one off. The Conservatives dropped one off the other day, and I still haven't responded to that one. And then yesterday, I actually heard the door go, and I looked out of the window, and I saw this little old woman shuffling down my driveway. So I rushed downstairs, grabbed the leaflet that she'd put through the door, opened the door, ran after her, and I was going to tell her where to stick her unenvironmentally friendly piece of paper that nobody needs. But I changed my mind. because I thought it's a little old lady. And even though I'm quite elderly myself, I'm still 6'3" and probably would have frightened her. So I decided to engage her in a conversation. We stood in the street and talked for possibly 15 to 20 minutes, during which time I disabused her of all of the ideas she had about the parliamentary Labour Party and how things are being run and how the public actually feels. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the conversation. And when she actually came back and said, well, what would you suggest instead? And I said, and as I've said on the podcast in the past, a parliament of independents who directly represent the will of their constituents, and more referenda. So if these people who have been elected to Parliament as independents come up with a policy or an idea or want to back something, they put it onto their website and their constituency votes on what they want. And so therefore, they properly represent their people's, you know, the people who elected them, their will. And she had nothing to say to that other than, well, what about people who are underrepresented in the community? So what about women and stuff? And what about, you know, the pay gap and EDI stuff or IED? I can never get that abbreviation correct or an acronym. But it's it was quite gratifying to have a chat. I did ask her if she'd come on the podcast. I very much doubt that she would. She said, well, I listened and watched some podcasts, but I don't do them. I said, well, you know, we would offer you a safe space, inverted commas, where you wouldn't get attacked, where you'd get a chance to put your opinions across, but we would ask some quite probing and difficult questions. So I'll weigh out on that. I'm going to email her and extend the invitation again, but it's so hard to get any kind of person with any kind of political career to open themselves up unless they're in one of the biased media's, you know, organizations, if it's them that's doing it.
Well, I think they're told, you know, by the party, you know, whoever they have in the running the day-to-day operation stuff, they're told, look, these are the things that you can say. This is our stance, and this is what you're to say when you represent us. And these are the platforms that you are to go on, and you're not to venture outside of that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that is, you know, a quite perverse obstruction to freedom of speech, because you never get the truth out of anyone's mouth. All you get is the party line and that narrative. So we need to keep trying, and I will keep trying.
Well, I mentioned Mr. Gerry Adams there, former Sinn Féin president. I don't know if you know this or not, Marty. I know that you're a big fan of food. Yeah, you like to cook.
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Adams now has a new cookbook out. It's called The Negotiator's Cookbook, and he's sharing some of his favorite recipes that he used during the peace protest and the talks of the 1990s. So I thought maybe you'd be interested in possibly picking up a copy of the man's cookbook. You know, maybe there's a recipe in there on how to make a Molotov cocktail. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
I'm more interested in picking up the man by his scrawny neck, throwing him round until he's a lifeless rag doll on the floor. That is what I would do, given the chance, with Gerry Adams. He's a scumbag. He was a brigade commander in the Irish Republican Army. So no, Gerry Adams is not my favourite person. I kind of respect his right to fight for whatever he believes in, but it was the dirty, underhanded, concentrating on civilian targets, cowardly way in which they fought. But this is gonna sort of undermine a lot of what I've said in the past. If you think about it, which you probably have, the struggle that the Irish Republicans found themselves against is the same struggle that we are all against now. And that is that the government and the powers that be are corrupt, will not let you have a fair shout. And if you step out of line, they'll bring their gang in blue uniforms down upon you. So, yeah, I don't like Gerry Adams because I think he's a cowardly murderer. But at the same time, in the last few years, it's been revealed to me that we all need to up our level of activism and protest against the people that we've got in Westminster.
One of the things that has been very prominent in the last few years in the US and the UK specifically, and of course many Western nations, is this transgender movement. That's been one thing. And if you speak out against that, of course, you know, you're called everything under the sun. But the UK and the government and the NHS made a very significant announcement just a couple of days ago regarding that, and regarding the children of this, you know, what the targets of that. Have you heard about this?
No, not exactly. No. Okay. So please enlighten me.
All right. Sky News did a small little snippet on it. They just announced it, and it's just kind of like, you know, gone off into the into the abyss, and no one's talked about it. But I want to play this little bit of this little audio clip here.
And let's just bring you a bit of breaking news, which may be of interest to
Hang on. Yeah. My fault. Middle of the afternoon. I'm not on my game.
And let's just bring you a bit of breaking news, which may be of interest to some of you. It's about puberty blockers. Now, these are drugs that are used to delay the changes of puberty in transgender youngsters. In terms of how they are prescribed by the NHS, there has been a lot of controversy over the last few years about this. At the moment, they are only prescribed to children attending gender identity services as part of clinical research, and they are not routinely offered to children at gender identity clinics, but they are still offered. Well, the government, NHS England, has just confirmed that children will no longer be prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics. This is coming from NHS England. It just broke in the last few moments.
I would call that a win, wouldn't you?
That is a win. I'd like to mention another win just briefly, because we were talking about it earlier on. Did I ever moan on a podcast about the local council turning everything into, and I will get back to the trans thing, I promise, turning every car park into a pay-by-app site? Did I ever mention
that? I think you did. Yeah, and you were going off about just how ridiculous it was, and I was agreeing with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and they have, under pressure from the locals, reversed that decision. And so now all of the car parks are going to be cash or card. And so that's good. So on to the trans thing. Yes, it is a win, but it's not to be trusted, is it? It's one of those things that the government, who knowing full well that all of these things that divide us undermine us as a force to stand against them and get rid of them, in an election year, they're going to be throwing out little treats to various sectors of the voting public in the hope that it wins their vote. And that's what this is. Quite frankly, whether it was in, what were they called? Gender assignment or gender?
Gender clinics or something like that. Yeah,
something like that. The fact that they exist is ridiculous. If you get born, as you do, and you grow up and you decide that you're gay, then you be gay by all means. And you should have the support of your parents because they should love you. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen all the time. Parents find it hard to deal with. Likewise, if you grow up as a little boy who decides that I don't like being a little boy, I'd rather be a little girl, then you crack on until you reach adulthood. You can wear whatever clothes you like. There's no law against it. The only thing is you have to abide by the other rules and regulations of the land. So safe spaces or single sex spaces, you can't go into the other sex's space just because you feel like you want to wear a dress and be called Mary or something, you know? So the fact that these gender clinics exist is quite mental, and especially as it's being, you know, paid for through the NHS. And the fact that they were prescribing puberty blockers, something that actually, you know, when you go through the whole process of going from a baby to an adult, your mind changes. Your feelings change, your emotions change. You've got hormones driving around your body, making changes, making you feel different to what you did yesterday, for instance, not different from anybody else, because we all go through it. But to block a natural process like puberty is ridiculously harmful.
That's criminal. I'll go a step further.
It is criminal. It doesn't make any sense that they were being issued or prescribed in the first place. So I just see it as one of those little tidbits that a government will throw out and do in the hope to garner votes from certain sectors of society. Because let's face it, the transgender percentage of the population is, well, was probably only about 1%, maybe less.
It wasn't even that. It was, I think it was like 0.25% or something like that.
Yeah.
It was very small.
But because, and I've said this before, wherever there's some kind of difference or disability, there's normally some kind of fund you can access. And also, it's the whole, I want to be different. We used to express our individuality through popular music subcultures. You know, going all the way back, you had mods and rockers. You had Teddy Boys before that. Punks, emos, all these different pop subcultures that young people could dress differently to the way their parents dress, to outrage their parents. Those kind of things. That's not happening so much anymore. And what is happening is people are identifying as the opposite gender to the one they were born as. People are deciding that they're some kind of animal and identifying as a cat or a dog or a donkey or something, you know. So it's just a way of rebelling. And so that number of 0.25% has probably increased, but it's still a tiny, tiny portion of the population. So if anyone can be offended and pissed off by the government, it's those tiny portions of society.
And, you know, we kind of wonder where a lot of this money's coming from. And you know, you say it's well funded by the government. Okay, well, where do they get it? I'm assuming that it comes from places like NGOs and things like that as to where all the stuff actually, you know, the originators of that funding. I was actually looking at a map this morning. In 2007, there were 2 gender clinics in the U.S. altogether, as in the entire nation. 2. Now there are, I think, almost 800. Where did they all come from? Where did all of that money come from? And where was any kind of public consultation? You know, where was any of this brought up in any local council meetings or anything for these to be put into the communities, to be worked into the school curriculum, for this to be pushed onto students? Where was any of that?
Well, we've talked about this ad infinitum, that it's a subversion of our main institutions. And it's coming from the left-leaning educators, bureaucrats, and it's designed to split up society as a whole, because divide and conquer. It's as simple as that. And so I strongly resent any money spent on this kind of stuff from public funds, from taxpayers' money. If you have a child that has these kind of issues, then you need to fund them. If they need help, therapy, whatever they need, it's down to you as the parent to fund it. It's not down to taxpayers. There are other conditions and things. If someone is mentally healthy, can hold a job, is physically able, then when they reach adulthood, they can bloody well save up and pay for their own gender reassignment and their own counselling. It shouldn't be coming out of taxpayers' money.
I agree. I was just
I can't vouch for the veracity of the numbers, but I saw a clip probably on YouTube or something as I'm scrolling through, and there was somebody saying how many people in Russia, I think it was 2022, were arrested for something they had said online. What would you care to take a guess at that?
I'm going to go. Well, first of all, where are the figures coming from?
I'm not sure. I'm not. Well, they're coming from Russia.
Okay. Well, if they're coming from Russia, I'm going to say less than 1,000.
Yeah. The actual answer is 300. Now, in the same year, in the United Kingdom, a much smaller country with a much smaller population, 3,300 people were arrested and taken into custody and put through court processes for things they had said online. So if I want to express my opinion about whether public money should be spent on gender reassignment, I'm taking a risk, because all it takes is someone to get offended about it, and the next thing you know, I've got a knock on the door and the gang in blue uniforms have turned up to punish me?
First of all, I don't believe that those numbers are quite true out of the Russian government. So I'm just going to throw that one out there. That's the first thing. Okay.
But, yeah. But those people in Russia, and I'm just guessing here, probably said something about Putin and the current administration.
That would be my guess, yeah.
So only 300 people were stupid enough in Russia to talk out, or brave enough, whichever way you want to look at it, against Putin. Whereas hundreds of thousands of people in the UK hold the same opinions as I do, I think. But 3,300 people were arrested and prosecuted for online speech.
Marty, you should count your lucky stars that we have better windows than the Russians do.
Yeah, because if people heard what I was screaming out the window or at the window at people, I'd get arrested immediately. That would count as common assault if you cause someone distress and alarm just by shouting at them. I think that constitutes common assault here in the UK, or at very least a public order offence.
Mm-hmm. We have safer second stories and third stories as well.
Yeah, you want to avoid a balcony at all cost in Russia.
Yes. The Canadian government, speaking of online speech, you've heard about what the Canadian government has done?
Nothing much good of any lately anyway, as far as I can see.
No.
But what in particular do you refer?
They have passed a law, as of today, they have passed a law that could put people in prison for life to do the type of thing that you're suggesting.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Vince sent me...
And before you do that, I would just like to put this up there. I'd just like to show you this. This was, of course, endorsed by Mr. Trudeau himself. And as you can see here, he's surrounded by some lovely members of the community.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous members of the community. Mm-hmm. Are they on the left of the picture there? Is that young lady? And that is a young lady.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. She has the...
Are they fake or is that
I think
her?
I'm going to go with, just looking at it, I'm going to go with, I think those are real.
So, you know, public decency laws clearly ignored. I mean, I wouldn't object to seeing anyone dressed in the manner that those people are dressed, as long as they were nowhere near children.
Yes, as long as they're not at the public library reading to children, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that was something that I got a message from the local council saying that the Gosport Public Library, the second floor, which is normally the children's area, wouldn't be available on the 8th of April due to a ticketed event. And I've asked what is the event, and I'm hoping that it's not a drag queen story time, because then I'll have to put my money where my mouth is and go and protest it. Not because I've got anything against drag queens, but I have got a huge problem with trying to subvert children to these ideas, these pseudo-sexual or sexual ideas and attitudes at a inappropriate age. People find their own way. In the Navy, you're going to have to get on the bleep button. We had a phrase called CDF, right? If someone had a task to do and someone would say, yeah, how do I do it? It said, well, it's CDF. Well, what do you mean, CDF? Common dog f**k. You don't have to tell a dog how to procreate. It just knows, yeah? And you don't need to tell people who they're attracted to and how they should be approached and what's right for them and what's wrong for them. Parents, by all means, have the talk with your kids about the birds and the bees. But whatever else happens thereafter, it's down to the individual to find their own way. It shouldn't be a case of cramming young, impressionable minds with, and I'm going to use the word because it just means not normal, perverse sexual practices.
I know where you stand on religion, right? I'm not going to turn this into like a religious discussion, okay? So don't think I'm going to go there with it. But do you remember the clip that I've played before of Yuri Bezmenov, where he talks about how they don't make, you know, the ones that go along with everything, they don't make it? Well, he was giving another speech somewhere, and he had a blackboard up in front of him, and he was writing things down, telling people exactly what was going on. You were talking about subversion, okay? So let's hear what he has to say. You know, this is a former KGB guy, former propagandist for the KGB. Let's hear what he has to say about the undermining of society and replacing our religion and the consequences of that. Again, I'm not going to turn this into a religious discussion, but undermining the family, right? I'll just go that, you know, the foundational institutions that make us, you know, a harmonious society or homogenous society, however you want to put it. But this was his take. And again, this is back in the 80s. So just see if you can tell whether or not what he was talking about has actually come to pass.
It takes from, say, 15 to 20 years to demoralize a society. Why 15 or 20 years? This is the time sufficient to educate one generation of students or children. One generation, one lifetime span of a person, a human being, which is dedicated to study, to shaping up the outlook, ideology, personality. No more, no less. Usually it takes from 15 to 20 years. These are the areas of application of subversion. What it means exactly, in case of religion, destroy it, ridicule it, replace it with various sects, cults, which bring people's attention, faith, whether it is naive, primitive, doesn't really matter. As long as the basically accepted religious dogma is being slowly eroded and taken away from the supreme purpose of religion, to keep people in touch with the supreme being, that serves the purpose. Therefore, replace accepted, respected religious organizations with fake organizations. Distract people's attention from the real faith and attract them to various different faiths. Education. Distract them from learning something which is constructive, pragmatic, efficient. Instead of mathematics, physics, foreign languages, chemistry, teach them history of urban warfare, natural food, home economy, your sexuality, anything, as long as it takes you away, okay? Social life, replace traditionally established institutions and organizations with fake organizations. Take away the initiative from people. Take away the responsibility from naturally established links between individuals, group of individuals, and society at large, and replace them with artificial bodies, the bodies of people, groups of people, whom nobody elected, never. As a matter of fact, most of the people don't like them at all, and yet they exist. One of such group is media. Who elected them? How come they have so much power? Almost monopolistic power on your mind. They can rape your mind. But who elected them? How come they have a nerve to decide what is good and what is bad for the elected by you, president, and his administration? Who the hell are they?
Is he wrong?
In some respects, yes. But in my opinion, the first thing I want to talk about, though, with regards to Bezmenov, is bearing in mind, he found himself in the role of, you know, an agent for the Soviet Union. He had a job to do. He was a propagandist and so on. He still decided to defect. Something either...
I know what it was.
Yeah, go on. Tell me what it was.
He found that he was assigned to India, actually. And he found that the orders that were coming through, they were getting ready to overthrow part of the country. The Soviets were. They were undermining everything. And he found that all of the people that he had actually made friends with, he was told to make friends with and to collaborate with, he found out, he got a look at the kill list, you know, the assassination list, and all these people were going to be killed. And he said, wait a minute, this isn't right. Well, I was told to get close to all of these people, and they've been very hospitable to us. They've been very kind to us and very nice to us. And now you just want me to off everybody. No.
Right. So during his 15 years of education within the Soviet Union, he would have been indoctrinated. He would have been steered in a certain direction, but he was still able to break his programming when the truth finally was in front of his eyes with that kill list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, you can subvert a whole generation by teaching the wrong thing. I've got a story which I won't bore you with now, but I'll tell you later. In fact, I probably already told you about how that was done in Japan with karate, of all things. You can subvert a whole generation by teaching them the wrong things, but somehow we've still got that part of us that can recognize the difference between right and wrong And that's what happened to Bezmenov then. That's what he, at least that's his cover story. That's what he told the people that he defected to. So can you actually properly destroy society by just subverting one generation of it? Probably not. The next thing that where I disagree with him is the purpose of religion. Religion was modern religions. When I say modern, I'm talking about the Catholic Church.
The boys in blue are coming for you because of what you're
saying. They're coming for me. Yeah. I mean, obviously someone's listening in already. Damn 77th Brigade are onto us. Now they've gone. It's okay. I don't have to reach for anything. So, religion. It was designed like the Catholic Church, Islam, Judaism even, was designed to keep poor people in check. It's what it does. You put Occam's razor up to it. What is the real purpose of these formal religions? It's to stop the poor from killing the rich because it makes you feel guilty. You've heard of Catholic guilt, but there's a whole set of guilt promoting text within the Bible, the Torah, and the Quran. It makes you feel guilty if you stand up for yourself. So, you've got to completely bow down to the will of God, inverted commas, and somebody who's telling you what that will of God is working directly for the royalty, the aristocracy, the rich. And political ideologies have supplanted religion to a great degree. Of course, there are still millions upon millions of Catholics, Jews, and Muslims in the world. I would say stuff like, if you look at Hinduism, there are so many gods recognized within Hinduism that no one god is. So basically what I'm saying is these monotheistic religions only refer to one approach, whereas the pantheons in other religions, the Norse religion, Hinduism, Shintoism, it looks at all aspects of human behavior and human response to certain situations. So Bezmenov's assertion of what religion is for is quite wrong. But the rest of what he's saying is absolutely true, because we're seeing it happening right now. We're seeing all these little splinter groups, Black Lives Matters,
Antifa,
people getting behind the LGBTQ plus
all the Soros message. NGOs, all that stuff, Open Society and all the little spinoffs that he sponsors.
But the ridiculous thing is that acronym, LGBTQ, whatever it bloody well is now, the lesbian, bi and gay people, they don't want anything to do with that. They're not, that extreme. There are certain members of that community, like Tatchell, for instance, Peter Tatchell. He was a prominent gay rights activist, but because he enjoyed the fame when he was winning rights for gay people, which I fully support, because he enjoyed that notoriety and that fame, he's carried it on into the transgender, self-identifying whole debacle that has continued. So there are people within the LGBTQ community who will jump on the bandwagon, but that's largely down to their own narcissism, because they want to be involved and they enjoyed feeling important and getting the attention of the media.
I guess that explains Eddie Izzard then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, the ridiculous thing about Eddie is that he was incredibly funny.
Yeah, he was a funny guy.
The long monologue sketches that he used to do as part of his stand-up were just terrific. But he enjoyed the attention too much. Maybe his humor when you go back and watch a sitcom that you really enjoyed, let's say 20 years ago, because you can get everything now. Back when I was a kid, I used to be addicted to sitcoms. And if I missed one, I would be really unhappy, because we didn't have VCRs to record it. We didn't have box sets to watch the whole lot. If you missed it, you missed it. And it would probably never come on again. But now, of course, it's all available. But when you go back and watch some things, the humor just doesn't wear well. It doesn't age as still funny. And maybe that's what he felt about his own comedy although I'd say he's wrong. So he had to find something else to keep that notoriety up.
I suppose so. I do apologize. We are going to have to cut and run a little bit early today, but it's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. I'll see you next week.
You will. And next week, I want to talk about what you and Bruce were talking about on the last podcast that you did, because that situation in Haiti needs more thought, I think.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
But if we run out of time today, I've got some of the things off my chest, but there's always more.
Perhaps we can chew the fat next week. I don't know. We'll have to see if we have an open day. So we'll see.
Sure.
All right. We will go ahead and call this one done. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone. Have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.